Everyone's so busy keeping up. Forget about the Joneses. We all on our telephones with the texts and the tweets and the beats. What he said, she said, can't even follow the thread. Down the hole, we all go. Me, I like keeping up too, with my Corona and my attitude. That's La Vida Masfina.
Relax responsibly. Corona Extra Beer, imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Roy, your ears might have been burning on Monday. I had a meeting with Joe Pohlad to talk about taking over as executive chairman of the Minnesota Twins, replacing his uncle Jim Pohlad, who's still going to be active as an owner, but Joe's really going to become the day-to-day face of the franchise. And Joe Pohlad and Dustin Morris, I was sitting with them, and they were talking about our podcast, because who doesn't listen to our podcast? That's always, the pertinent question here. And Joe has spent the last couple of years redesigning the Twins uniforms, kind of doing the rebrand. He was not particularly thrilled that we thought that the new M hat reminded us of the Marlins. He denies that it is anything like the Marlins, and he thinks we should reconsider.
Well, I don't know. You guys were talking.
And
by
the way, I'm saying this. He brought it up, but he was also being very funny about it. He wasn't like really mad, although I think he was a little mad.
Yeah. No, I'm sure he was. I'm not going to duck that. I'll just say that you guys brought up the M looking like the Marlins. I have no idea what the Marlins M looks like. I mean, I don't know. Maybe it does. And if it does, that's not a good thing for me. As I said before, I mean, I'm a traditionalist. So in baseball about a lot of things. So I have to wait a little bit and see if the things grow on me. I like the pinstripe grays. I like the white uniforms. The idea of the Twin Cities on the front is kind of growing on me. That's like what I said when we talked about this. I have to let that percolate a little bit. So if Joe's is mad at us for our feeling about the M, then I think he's still ahead of the game from me.
I think he's going to get over it. Yeah. I will say, sitting here, my first reaction was, okay, that's the Marlins M. And Joe said, no, it's not the Marlins M. So I went and looked it up. And you know what? He is right. It's not the Marlins M. The Marlins M looks very different from that. It's kind of offset in the same way that the Marlins M is, but the Marlins M is much thicker and usually had some kind of a fish swimming over it. So it is a completely different design. This is a thin M with a North Star on it, which should differentiate it. So we might have been completely inaccurate, but the M will take more time to grow on me than the Twin Cities or the home whites, which I just immediately loved.
Yeah, I like all the rest of it too. And if we were inaccurate, it would be a first.
That's never happened before.
It would be the only time we were ever inaccurate, except for
the other times.
Thought we were inaccurate and we weren't.
So let's get into this. By the way, let's start here, because we are going to talk about the poll ads, the transition of ownership, my conversation with Joe the other day. You are a former Twin, a Twins broadcaster, and a financial person in downtown Minneapolis. Of course, the poll ads check a lot of those boxes too. How well do you know the poll ads, and do you know Joe at all?
I do know Joe. I've known him since he was a kid. I mean, he's still a kid to me, but he would be mad to hear me say that too. I hope they are listening to every podcast, as they say. And Joe, you can be mad at me for calling you a kid, even though you're an accomplished grown man. Everybody's a kid to me these days, it seems. I first met Carl in 1985 when I rejoined the Twins. I have a wonderful personal Carl Pohlad story that today. But beyond that, Jim Pohlad went to school with my wife. He went to high school with my wife. She's known Jim and family members for quite a while. I met Jim when I, you know, got here at 85. They were members of the same Interlochen Country Club we did, as you know, was Bob. And I mean, we literally did stuff as families. When Tommy and Joe and Chris were young and they were, you know, in and around my son and twin daughter's ages, every Christmas time, when we just talked about this the other day, we got on a bus that Jim or Bob, I think maybe Bob Pohlad, had organized. We got all the families on a bus and we caravaned up it was a Christmas vacation. If you've ever seen one, we went on a bus, you know, in a caravan with a truck with a giant trailer, and we tromped out into the snow and we all cut down Christmas trees and threw them on the trailer and came back on the bus and, you know, tied up our own tree to our house and to our cars. And, you know, I mean, it's like that. I mean, we've known them, and I've known Joe for a long time.
He's 40 years old. He's taking over a major role. And, you know, one of the themes of our conversation was, he said, I don't think you're going to notice much of a difference. I'm not going to do things much differently. I don't have any, you know, he has great respect for Jim and the way Jim ran things. So he's not looking to make any dramatic changes. He thinks very highly of Falvey and Rocco. And, you know, I thought one of the most interesting things he said to me was, people have no idea what Derek Falvey is building behind the scenes in terms of an analytics and scouting organization. And it's funny because I've heard that from a few different people since Derek arrived in town, that, okay, you know, they're not going to talk about it, but behind the scenes, they are building, you know, a combination. They're building it. If it sounds almost like they have MIT, you know, a office someplace with supercomputers just running overtime, and they're using that to inform every decision. Now, you know, that gets into analytics, and hey, somebody's still got to make the right call, and there's luck involved or anything else. But I found it very interesting that, you know, here's a 40-year-old guy who's coming in, and it sounds like he's pretty happy with the way things are going, even despite, you know, the struggles down the stretch last year. What are your impressions of Joe taking over?
Well, I think I think succession planning is always good, and I think that he has been under the tutelage for a long time of his father, just about life and business, and then, you know, then his uncle Jim, and in the baseball side of things, he's done a lot of things had a lot of jobs in the Twins organization, he's a young, sharp guy. And so I think what's in play, and one person you didn't mention, and I know that you feel the same way, I'm sure he has tremendous respect for the job that President Dave St. Peter does. If you've got St. Pete and you've got, you know, Falvey and Levine, you know, you're, as the CEO, I mean, you're way ahead of the game. And as a CEO, you're only as good as your people that are really going to, you know, run a lot of the important aspects. And, you know, his job as a CEO is going to be to set strategy and direction and all those kinds of things. And I think he's qualified to do that. And especially so since he has some really good people in very important positions working for him. So,
and what I'll give him credit for, and I observed this, you know, firsthand myself being around the team a lot, is for the last 15 years, he has actually done, you know, mid-level jobs in baseball operations, in marketing, in communications. He spent a lot of time with Dustin Morse, who's, you know, the best in the business in terms of running a PR staff. And honestly, so this is not your typical, you know, silver spoon scenario where somebody gets a job just because, you know, because of the last name. It's an ownership family. They were going to pass it on to somebody in the ownership family, of course, but he actually did the jobs. And I, you know, and I will, I'll be honest, you know, when we set up our meeting for him to talk, you know, I didn't know how personable he would be or how relaxed he would be. And he was very relaxed, and he and Dustin were just kind of, you know, needling each other like old friends. It gave me, a pretty good feeling about, you know, about him and where he's going to take the franchise.
Yeah. And I'll just tell you quickly that, that doing the various jobs inside a company or an organization has been a Pohlad family trait since Carl. I mean, all of, you know, Jim and Bob, you know, Bill, the youngest Carl's son, is a tremendously talented and successful movie producer and director. And so he's not been involved as much in the family businesses as Jim and Bob. But Jim and Bob worked in all the businesses. They Carl kind of decided early on which of the two were going to go which direction in all the various Pohlad holdings, and they worked jobs. They didn't immediately come in as presidents or CEOs of businesses. They worked jobs, and they sat on boards and listened to, you know, how things were run. And their sons, Tommy and Chris and Joe, have had to do the same thing. No Pohlad has, you know, since Carl, and even Carl, and let's put it this way, Carl's sons and grandsons started at a higher level than Carl did, because Carl one time was boxing for a living and had to, you know, kind of build everything from scratch. But what I'm saying is that, you know, none of the Pohlad sons or grandsons have started at the top level. They've all worked their way through, even though the answer was going to be they were going to be at the top level. I mean, there's no you know, getting around that. But they've all done it right since Carl.
Let's get to the inevitable pushback we get anytime we talk about the Pohlads. First, I want to let you know that Corona is the official import beer sponsor of the Minnesota Twins and the presenting sponsor of the Chin Music Show here at TalkNorth.com. Thanks to Corona, thanks to some of our other prominent sponsors across the network, TSR Injury Law, Star Bank, Minnesota Propane. If you'd like to advertise with this show or any show on the network, you can reach our sales executive, Karen Cleary, at KCLEARY at TalkNorth.com. We do recommend subscribing to your favorite podcast app. For the show or any show you like on the network. It's free. It's easy. Remember, we have Cheryl Reeve, Michael Russo, Anthony LaPanta, Dave Lee, Mike Grimm, John Krasinski, John Millay, Jeff Diamond, Roy, and of course, our other partner on this show is Lavelle E. Neal III. We've got a great lineup. Check it all out at TalkNorth.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at TalkNorthPod to see the shows as they are released and see a schedule of our live shows. So listen, anytime I mention the Pohlads, I get immediate pushback. And here's the pushback. You know, okay, you know, they don't spend enough money on the franchise. They don't spend enough money on payroll, you know, basically. And of course, you know, when this move happened, I saw all these tweets and texts and other messages about nepotism. Well, listen, I've railed against nepotism in sports and society many times. To me, nepotism, in the real functioning definition, to me, nepotism is when you have a group of candidates and you overlook more qualified candidates to hire somebody less qualified who has a similar name. And we do see that a lot in sports. This is different. This is an ownership group. Okay, the Pohlads are not going to hand off family ownership of the Twins to somebody outside the family. It's going to go to somebody in the family. All you can hope for, if you're a fan or somebody who just wants to see things run right, is that the people who end up taking charge are qualified.
Well, it's absolutely true. A couple of things about that. First, a full disclosure, a personal reminder to everybody. I mean, I think the word nepotism has actually, in its original form, was actually getting a job from your uncle. I mean, I think that was a major part of the original definition. And I got traded to the Twins and played for my uncle for 6 years. When I was here, you know, the first 2 years, I got screamed nepotism, you know, at me, you know, every day. And sometimes pretty vociferously. And, you know, that performance, you know, takes care of those kinds of things. And after, you know, 1978 or so, I didn't hear it any longer. And so the same thing will be there. I don't think there's, so you're right. I mean, I think the nepotism, you know, there's no such thing as nepotism in a family group here with the Polads. If you want, you want to keep the ownership in the family, if at all possible, and B, if you have a family member that you believe is qualified. And I will tell you that if Jim didn't think Joe could handle this job, I mean, there's too much money at stake for him to, you know, put somebody that's not bright and accomplished in there. I mean, that's regardless of family. I mean, it just wouldn't happen. So I reject the, you know, the nepotism deal. And the other thing that I absolutely reject out of hand, categorically reject the premise that if you are a billionaire, if you have that kind of money to be able to own a team, then you should lose personal money in signing players to, you know, you, the argument that they've got all the money that in the world, they got more than they need, they should spend the money. And I reject that categorically. Now, that's nuanced for me because I think there is a line or a consideration. If you want to own a team, then you need to understand that you're going to make your money on the back end when, if and when you sell the team. You're not going to get rich unless you're the Yankees or the Dodgers. You're not going to get rich in the meantime. The operating costs of owning a ball club are in most places, and especially the Twins, are significant in terms of does all revenue from all sources cover expenses from all sources, and including payroll. And if it doesn't cover payroll completely, or if it just barely does, then are you required to spend your own personal money on signing Carlos Correa, or, you know, pick somebody over and above what the business will actually justify in terms of revenue and expenses? And I think there is a line where, okay, I'm the owner, I know that this is going to cost me some personal money, and I'm going to make it back when I sell the team at some point in time. Now, that's a leap. Somebody's got to, if you think the Twins are worth $1 billion, maybe we'll see how many billionaires there are that jump up and buy clubs, you know, for a billion. And there are some, but we'll see. In the meantime, I think you need to run it like a business and not spend your own money, less than judiciously, just because everybody says that you got a lot and you should, you know, you don't need any more, you should just spend it. So there's a fine line. There's a line there where you say, yeah, I'm gonna forego. I'm gonna feed the kitty here. I'm gonna feed this business with money that we have from, you know, various places and maybe my, you know, personal banking account. I'm gonna feed this business to get players so that we make the club more valuable, so that we make more money ultimately in the operation. You know, that's seed money that you don't know for sure how you're going to get back. And so there's a line there. You got to know that you're going to spend some money, but you are not, in my opinion, obligated to just have an personal checkbook to, you know, to raise payroll to Yankee payroll levels.
What we have seen in this town is that the easy answer for the average Twins fan, anytime anything goes wrong with the franchise, is just, okay, the Poleheads should spend more money. The Poleheads are cheap. And listen, I have a very interesting history with the Polehead family because I started covering the team in 1993. They had won 2 world championships. Carl deserved, you know, he received a certain amount of credit for running that franchise the way he did. He hired Andy McPhail and let him work, and it worked out pretty dang well. But I got mad at Carl when during the lockout strike, I can't remember which it was, in 94-95 strike. You know, he allowed a bunch of – he basically laid off a bunch of Twins employees who weren't making much money, and I thought it was kind of a PR move. And so Carl and I butted heads about that. I didn't like, and I thought Carl made a bunch of public missteps, the Don Beaver stuff, the contraction stuff, you know, saying that he was going to make a contribution to a new stadium and it was really a loan. And when you read the fine print, I thought Carl went through a stretch there where he was not, not presenting himself in the best light is the kindest way I can put it. And, you know, and I think the family was mad at me for a while. And then and since then, I really haven't had many close personal dealings with the Poleds. It's not like I'm sitting here as a friend of their family trying to make them sound good. I will just say that to me, Minnesota Twins fans don't understand what bad ownership would really look like. Bad ownership. No, really. Bad ownership is moving the team. That's the worst kind of owner you can have, moving the team. The Poleds are the opposite. They built Target Field. They want it to be here forever. They want the team to be here forever. And I'm talking about the current iteration of the Poleds family. Number two, spending a lot of time threatening to move the team is terrible for the franchise. They haven't done that since they kind of let Jerry Bell take over the stadium stuff in late 90s, early 2000s, and that's what led to the Target Field. And number three, the other kind is the meddling owner who messes with the baseball operations, pretends they know as much about baseball as people have spent their lives doing that work. Poleds don't do that. And the fourth kind of bad, terrible owner is the Daniel Snyders of the world, who are just horrible human beings and make and destroy the franchise from within. So you can go ahead and argue that they could spend 10, 20, 30, 40 more million a year, whatever number you have in your head. But I don't really think Twins fans who complain about the Poleds understand how bad it could be if they actually had bad owners in town.
I was laughing because I knew where you were going with that. And I absolutely agreed. Agree 100%. So I mean, that's why that made me chuckle when you opened with, I don't think Twins fans know what you know, bad ownership is, and it's really true. That reminds me of when I was playing for the Yankees in a time in my life that I just loved. It was wonderful having that opportunity to, you know, to play in the stadium and, you know, half the year and you travel around as Yankees. And I mean, that was really fun. And I had some good years there. It was great. We traded from the Twins to the Yankees when I was, and it ultimately worked out and I was able to come back here and, you know, finish up here, but in a big way. But the thing that reminds me of is, you know, people ask me what it was like playing for the Yankees. And I said, well, and what reminds me is, you know, people think of, you know, when you said that, you know, Paul hasn't liked you for a while, or you know, Pat Royce has a reputation for being acerbic and tough on people. And I just laugh about, you know, all that kind of stuff, because they asked me about playing in New York. I said, look, every place that you could play has usually one thing that is difficult to deal with as a player, right? Either the fans are really tough, or the media is really tough, whether it's totality or just one or two, you know, poison pen kind of people that you think they are, or the owner's really tough. And I said, in New York, you got the trifecta. and there are 100 poison pens. The fans will, you know, boo you off the field on a daily basis, and the owner's a maniac. And at this point, you know, it was George Steinbrenner at the time. And he was the meddling kind of owner. Now I liked and respected George, and we got along fine and all that. But my point is, oftentimes players and fans don't realize how they have it. And this is a wonderful place to play, and it's a wonderful place to be a fan.
Let's bring in Lavelle. Lavelle basically was talking about my conversation with Joe Polad and the fact that while you can. You know, anybody can complain about whatever they think the payroll should be. Bad ownership makes things. Bad ownership destroys franchises. The Poleds have been the opposite of that. This is a very stable franchise.
Exactly. And here's the thing, too, is that, by the way, good morning, both of you gentlemen, is that most owners in sports are successful businessmen. And they're successful in their businesses because they understand, you know, things like cost, average variable cost, elasticity of demand. They know what the bottom line means, and they're successful, and they make money anyway. It's not about spending money; it's about how much you save and make and invest and build. And the Poleds are definitely one of those types of owners. Just because they're worth like $4 billion doesn't mean they're supposed to automatically throw $500 million into salaries just because they have it. I mean, that's just no owner would ever do anything like that. You may get an occasional situation where, like Mike Ilitch a few years ago when he was, you know, failing in health, he wanted to see the Tigers win, so they authorized a lot of spending. But for the most part, you know, they have to be mindful of operational costs. The Twins have lost over $100 million the last 3 years. And that's lower than the actual number, which I've heard, which is kind of frightening. But they're so good in their other businesses, they're able to absorb it. They've got a lot of holdings and a lot of different things. But they continue to put money into Target Field to keep to update it and keep it in one of the top five ballparks in the league. And they have tried, you know, to sign quality talent. You know, they signed Nelson Cruz. They traded for Josh Donaldson. They've offered big contracts to a couple of pitchers. They agreed to signing Correa to $35 million last year. Jim Poulett has, you know, an issue with long-term contracts. And he's right. I mean, usually when you sign a guy to a 7, 8, 9-year, 10-year contract, you're kind of burning money this last couple of years when the guy's in his mid to late 30s and it's declining in ability. So I can see why he would be risk averse to those situations. My argument with them, and I always say this, okay, if you're not going to sign a guy for $100 million, take $10 million and make sure you have the best scouting and development department in baseball and develop your own talent. And I haven't seen that happen yet. That's my one quibble with them. If they're going to complain about how they can't play in the deep end of the free agent waters, then you got to be really good when it comes to finding the right players to draft and develop and get to the major leagues. So, but it's not easy. And I hear the Chief Poulett's comment all the time, and I think being able to talk to people with the organization, we have an idea of just how much it costs to run a baseball franchise. And they've tried to be successful, trying to be competitive, despite the fact that they get more money from ticket revenue than they do their television contract, which means they have a pretty crappy television contract. You know, you got like the teams like the Dodgers and the Angels and the Yankees, their TV contracts cover their payroll. That does not happen in Minnesota. So they're kind of operating in they're operating with one hand tied behind their back. They rely heavily on group sales. So group sales have been non-existent since COVID. I think they're hoping to bounce back this year and get commitments for the entire summer. I mean, that would help the bottom line a little bit as well. But despite that, they have been in the playoffs within the last 5 years a couple times. You know, they were there in 2020. They were there and they got, knocked out by the Yankees and knocked out by the Astros. So they've been able to put competitive teams in the AL Central together. But everybody wants to see them like sign a Jacob deGrom or just a Verlander. And, you know, in most cases, that's just not good business, but it would help if they would do a better job of just building and growing from within and finding their own top level talent. And then trying to keep it for 6 years and see if you can sign them to a long-term deal instead of if they don't want to play in the free agent waters. So I see where they're coming from in a lot of ways. And there's a lot of cool people over there. And Joe, you know, I've known Joe going on 20 years, and he's been working to get to this point where he would have, you know, authority in day-to-day operations of the club. And he's done it the right way because he has worked within the organization and has had different roles within the organization, and he has learned. I don't know. I still think that Jim Poulett's going to be like the godfather in this situation. And, you know, he'll probably have the final say-so on some moves here. But, you know, this is Joe's time to all the years that he's worked to learn about the baseball business and learn about the industry, you know, it's time to put that together and take over leadership of the organization. So it'll be very interesting to see the steps the Twins take over the next couple of years.
So one thing about that, Lavelle, I mean, this is a situation where it reminds me of on the baseball field when, you know, Bob Boone came right out of playing and he got hired to be a manager of the Kansas City Royals.
I covered him.
And he had played a lot of years for Gene Mauch in the Angels, on the Angels Club. And there was a deep respect between the two of those. And you know, Boone recognized Gene for being, you know, the caliber of manager and intelligence that he was. And when he got hired in Kansas City, and I don't know if this was whether he did this on his own or whether that was part of his interview process where he said, look, and I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this. But he brought Gene in to be the bench coach, just to sit next to him. And it wasn't the bench coach like bench coaches are now. It was, am I making the right decisions? Or here's why I'm doing this. Am I crazy? You know, that those kinds of things. And then more importantly, to talk before and after each game. Okay, what do we think about the decision that, you know, that I made? And how could I do that better? Or maybe that was a great one. And here's why. My point is obvious. I mean, Jim's going to be there, but rather than just hover over him, rather than Jim sitting at the head of the table and having Joe as his right hand and have that really direct shadow, I think that, you know, Jim will be a very, very exclusive kind of bench coach. And, you know, Chris Dozier we talked about it, you know, Lavelle, before you were on. I mean, Chris has paid his dues through the organization. Now he's going to get a chance, and there's going to be a bench coach back there just to be sure.
Right. Exactly. And I tell you, it's pretty cool. It's pretty fascinating. I was in awe of seeing Gene Mauch in the dugout and talking to him about the game. He has so much knowledge about baseball.
I've never seen anything like it.
I know. Learned a lot. He had this technique where he could look at a box score and like recreate each out going backwards. I was like, what?
Yeah, I've never seen anybody. I try to do that, and it's sometimes I'm successful, but it never seems to amaze me. He could look at the most complicated box score, and he could start with the last out of the game and work backwards, and he can tell you every out of every whole game and who pitched to whom and what they did. It was incredible.
Hey, thanks again to Corona, the official import beer sponsor of the Minnesota Twins and the presenting sponsor of the Chin Music Show here at TalkNorth.com. We do appreciate you listening. December 15th, 7 p.m., Head Flyer Brewing. We're going to run the Cheryl Reeve Show and the Gloria Ramsey Winter Wear Drive. It's a great cause. It's always a great time. If you get a chance, stop on by. Those things are always just a lot of fun. Let's wrap up today's episode. Oh, and by the way, I guess, Lavelle, I should go back to one thing Roy and I talked about previously. When I'm sitting there with Joe, he offered a combination of outrage and fake outrage over us saying that the M hat looks like the Marlins hat. And so I had to come back. And by the way, you guys might be getting M hats in the mail now.
Oh no.
I hope that he has that kind of needling sense of humor. It'd be great.
Yeah. I think definitely you, Roy. I don't know about Lavelle, but I think Roy's definitely me getting like 100 M hats in the mail here. but I have to admit, Lavelle, I did go look up what the Marlins M hat used to look like, and it doesn't look the same. He's right. It was more of a block M, and it always had a fish or something nearby. So this is a different, I have to give it to him. The offset of the M is similar, but it doesn't look like the same M.
Okay. All right. I'll buy that. That's why I just reaction when I saw it. Maybe it was because of the color. I wish they would have done something with that North Star to make it a little more prominent, but someone told me if they made it any bigger, it looked a lot like the Houston Astros cap, and they didn't want to go that direction. So,
Well, we are at that point in sports history where a lot of stuff has been done. It's hard to be original at this point.
That's a good point. That is a very good point. And you know, but I thought they did a nice job with the Twin Cities.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
I like the home whites too. I got sick of them. Their color scheme was moving closer and closer to Cleveland's, and I'm glad they took a step away from that. So,
Yeah, well, I'm all for all of this, and I think the Yankees ought to totally redesign their uniform. Cool stuff. You know, get rid of the Yankee pinstripes and do something modern. Come on.
Well, it's funny, right? Because my personal rule about uniforms, and it, you know, it's a rule. It's everybody has to follow it. Is that if you are a traditional, proud franchise or program, you shouldn't mess with the uniforms. And if you are an upstart, then you should go crazy. And I think the Twins find themselves in the middle. They've won two World Series. They're an established franchise, but they're not the Yankees or the Red Sox or the Dodgers, where you just can't touch. So would you, you know, so for you, if you were going to do a rebrand of the Twins, what old uniforms would you go back to and rely on?
Well, all I will say is they were in the World Series with their original old school uniforms in 1965, and they won two World Series with classic white and gray with pinstripes. And so I guess I'll just leave it there.
So for you, the correct M hat would be the old lowercase M that won two World Series.
Yeah, I like that one. I'll be honest with myself. I mean, and people will be mad at me about this, but I was not we went from, you know, the double knit waistband, no belt loop, and also on the road baby blues, which everybody likes, but they looked like, because of the double knit and the band belt and all that, the band waistband, they look like pajamas to me, and I wasn't crazy about that. And when we got those in 87, when we got those pinstripe uniforms that just look like a modern version of a real classic, I just love that. Now, whether or not they had that M or a TC or whatever, I don't care. I just loved the uniforms from where we came from to that. I just thought that we had gotten big league uniforms at that point.
My favorite, I liked the creams that they wore, the home creams they wore when they first moved into Target Field. I love the color baby blue like you. I didn't like the you know, that weird waistband thingy that you guys used to have. But I would love to see some classic old baby blues, but having them look like a uniform instead of like pajamas. And I think the twin stripes, I think, just they're classic, and you won two World Series. And those would be my choices. Although, once again, I like the new Twin Cities ones, and I like the new home whites.
Well, just so the people know, because people are going to scream at me about my feeling about the baby blues, but they had elastic waistbands and they had pullover tops, and it just didn't feel like, you know, a big league. And the baby blue, I mean, if you're going to wear baby blue, I just kind of think that you have to make it as traditional as baby blue can be. But there you go.
I agree. I've always favored the TC hat. I think that's a really cool looking logo.
TC hat has always been my favorite.
Yeah. And so I would run with that over the M. Like the baby blue. I actually really like when they went to the throwback ones that they used to wear in the 60s with the special fabric they used. The ones that Harmony Killebrew wore. I liked those a lot too. I liked it when they wore that. So, I love baby blue and I love the old school ones, but I like what they did except for the two uniforms with the dark tops that I'm going to have to get used to. Maybe I'll have to see them more in person more and have it grow on me. But it was an attempt. It was also a money grab because for some reason, all they have available now for Christmas are the authentic jerseys. They don't have the replica jerseys. They're about $120 cheaper. They have the $309 authentic jerseys for sale right now. So, boo on the Twins on that one.
I just think they need to have a little tag on the expensive jersey saying, if you buy enough of these, we'll go get an ace.
Yeah, exactly.
It will only take 100 million jersey sales and we're good.
Yeah. I mean, it's what more? I mean, shouldn't, if the fan base wants to spend money, I mean, this is your path forward. All right. This is a very silly episode, but I had fun with it. Thank you guys. I appreciate it. Thanks to everyone who listens to the network and the show. We'll be back next week and we might actually talk about baseball.
We are going to have a heck of a conversation next week because I'm headed to San Diego this weekend. I'm on the Veterans Committee to determine the Hall of Famers for this class. That means we're voting on Bonds and Clemens and all those guys from the steroid era. Yeah. So,
okay. Well, we need to get you on this podcast then next week, Lavelle. I think that will be very important. So we'll have to make sure we have that time set. That'll be a good show. We'll also talk about Judge and free agency and all kinds of stuff. We have some music to talk about. We're not going to get to it this week, but I think we need to talk about Tom Petty, the Fillmore, and some other cool music developments. So thank you, gentlemen. We'll talk to you next week.